This is Carol Steckler at KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9. And then we're talking trash today. And let me introduce who we have in the studio. So we have a young man named Alexander Feinstein. This is Cam DeVore's grandson. Cam was really instrumental in getting us a voice on the air and Lopez having its own community radio station before, when it was just an idea. He helped with the legal work and was one of the many, many donors that we got the $50,000 for to put the station on the air. So we're pleased to have Alexander here. He's visiting from Los Angeles, staying with his grandmother, Bobby DeVore, and he'll be here for about 3 weeks. So you might, he's going to be here on Friday with Gary Alexander and see if he would like to do a little program himself with some more contemporary music that young people listen to. We don't really have that on the air now. We'd love to. And our guest today is Larry Eppenbach. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Carol.
I got to remember to put everything up here. And but we're going to start, as we usually do, with talking trash. And go ahead and put it on. And this is a song. Go ahead and push it. I'll talk over it. This is a song sung by Pete Seeger and written by Bill Stein.
He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it with a cough, contaminates it. He puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday, carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage.
Okay, almost, but not quite. There we have it, right there, our short intro with garbage. And I got to get myself a little situated so I can see Larry. Can you move over a little bit, Alexander? There we go. We're all set. So, Larry.
So, Carol.
Yeah, you are on the board, and you're also the secretary of this grand operation. How in the world did you get involved and when?
I have no idea. And
you just woke up one morning.
Well, it all happened in my life, actually quite a few years ago. I began about 6 or 7 years ago working with Neil, trying to come up with a system for the collection of roadside litter.
Uh-huh.
And so we kind of worked out the yellow bag plan, and that was, I thought, a pretty good sort of first step in it.
And it's still operating.
Yes. I got to know Neil, and as everybody from Lopez knows Neil, it was just a wonderful experience. And then about that time, and soon thereafter, lots of people began working on the Take Back the Dump. And I was not one of them to start with. Ed and others were working on that. I did notice that at one point the county wanted to charge us through their equipment rental and return division about $4,000 a month for a backhoe. And that kind of lit my fire, as it did everybody else who understood backhoes on this island. And I began realizing that the treatment of the Lopez solid waste effort was at best not even handedly performed by the county. Now, I know that a lot of people were into good and evil analyses, and I'm not one of them. I really think the county did not treat us well because they were trying to increase scale by making everything the same. And that actually was the case with respect to the backhoe. I think Ed Kildorf actually asked for an analysis of what our backhoe would cost, and they in turn came back with the average backhoe. Well, most of the backhoes are used on the floor, over on the tipping floors at Orcas and Friday Harbor and had thousands and thousands of hours of use a year, whereas ours had, you know, at most a half hour a day or an hour a day. So they weren't comparable at all, but to get everything looking the same, to increase the scale, the county worked very hard to treat us
all the same. Yeah. So it was their effort at being fair.
Well, I
said their effort.
Their effort, and from our view, you know, it was completely unfair. But something else happened too. They ran into some, I think, just bad luck with respect to siting the new sort of mega solid waste disposal facility on San Juan Island. A lot of work had gone into it, but it was just. Couldn't have been announced at the worst time, and the not in my backyard effect took over, and then, and here's where I think some blame belongs. They began a series of very expensive consulting studies to try to justify what was not easily justified to the people whose backyard were affected.
Right,
and so then it became a very, very expensive proposition, and we have to, you know, have to pay for that now. It's been wrapped into. A bond, but also on the Orcas side, there is a problem with the disposal area, and that's very true of a lot of disposal areas. And we're now having to pay for the maintenance, the measuring, the monitoring of that facility.
Yeah, as are the other sites as well.
We're only paying 15%+ of the total.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, which is, it is a fair share,
yes,
as it looks.
Yeah.
So, and from that point, when you got kind of interested in what the finances were going to look like and what was driving it. And let's go back a little bit, because I understand you do have some history in working with finances, Larry Uppenbach. And what is that? Where were you, and what was your work in that area?
You have to go far, far back to find that.
Let's go where we have to go.
Well, as a guy in his late 20s, Sarah and I went up to Juneau, fell in love with the people and the way of life up there. I ended up knocking on some doors, trying to become I call it a fish counter, but I was probably trying to become a biometrician for fish and game. But they weren't interested. It turned out that after staying in Juneau, knocking on doors for a few weeks and sort of going down the scale of hotels to one that really did smell like Pine Sol most of the time, I found a job as a research analyst for the Department of Revenue. And I was kind of surprised because it didn't take more than about a week for the governor to call me up and say, look, I need an analysis of our overall revenue plan here for the next 5 years, because we have $900 million, and that's, you know, four times
what
the budget
was. Who
was
the governor then?
Bill Egan was governor then.
Oh, wow.
And I worked for him for a few years, and then the subsequent governor, Jay Hammond. And it took about a year for me to transition from a research analyst 3 to a state investment officer, and then again, only in Alaska could this happen.
Yeah.
Did the job of deputy commissioner of the department come open? And so that made me kind of the guy responsible for running the state treasurer. And they had no idea who they had unleashed.
You were in your late 20s?
I was in my late 20s. I was 29 when I became deputy commissioner.
What was your college background? I assume you had
something. I did. I met some of the tests. I had a master's in business economics and an undergraduate degree in mathematics. So.
Yeah. Well, that is. I had heard that rumor, but I didn't realize you were like in your 20s, and it was a meteor. However you say that word.
It was a great accident, is what happened.
Yeah.
I was simply the right person at the right time, or the lucky person at the right time.
Yeah.
But it didn't take long, and it was very satisfying, because every place you looked, every drawer you opened, every person you talked to, you could make an improvement. And so we brought in cash management, investment management, debt managers. We had four of the really top flight investment officers that I could find. And we translated a kind of a open the envelope revenue system to the latest, cash lockbox, wire transfer, major industrial kind of revenue collection plan, together with, our own in-house investment system. Wow. That worked pretty successfully.
Well, that is a really great story. And now here you are, kind of on the other side of that. We are very lucky to have your expertise here. You're doing it as a volunteer. You're not going to, there will be no huge rise except for in gratitude and appreciation from your community.
There's no 900 million. Yet.
No, there isn't. But here you are, once again, in the right place at the right time for the citizens of Lopez.
Well, that's a nice thing to say. I hope so. What I find is fascinating are the citizens of Lopez, because when I got into this, I realized financially that we had several avenues to go down. One of them would be to recognize that this was a public service, to have it funded by a substantial property tax, much the way the library system is funded. And then the alternative to that would be a hybrid system that would use the property tax as simply one leg of a tripod, that the others would include both the revenue that we'd get from garbage, but also from volunteering. And I don't mean just dollar contributions from volunteering, but time contributions. Time, for example, that board members put in so that we don't have to hire a full-time executive manager.
Right. You guys are actually operating managers in a way on the ground. For a couple of you, not everyone, but
well, I think everyone. I mean, this is the interesting thing. These ideas in the abstract are kind of fun to support and talk about. On the ground, when you don't have any staff, you know you're never going to have any staff, and you have ideas, and you know that if you have an idea, you're going to be the one that's going to have to execute it.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how you filter your ideas to really get the productive ones to the
right.
surface, and how you work your heart out.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
There's no alternative.
Let's name all those folks that are working their heart out that are on the board, the managing board right now.
Right. Well, at the top, there's Paige Reed, who is our president, our chairman, and you've interviewed Paige. He's absolutely fabulous spokesman. He's a wonderful administrator. He's a natural list maker. He's president of his own Emerald Marine Company, so he has lots of business experience. He knows the language. He knows the he's a people person. If you've ever been to our facility, you have seen Paige Reed.
And you've probably had a conversation with him because he started it.
That's right. That's right.
Actually, I have to say a funny story about him. The other day, someone came in with one of those very large umbrellas, and there was another person there, and right away it was claimed by another person. And he went up to her and said, I'll give you $100,000 for that umbrella. And it got her attention. And then he said, we've been waiting for a long time for our volunteers, and I was obviously there that day, and we were working in the sun. And if possibly you could wait and find another one, they'll probably be here once someday. Could we use that here? And of course, she graciously did it. And he was even more eloquent and charming than I was in my speaking. So I've seen him in action.
He leaves people both informed and pleased, and that's a wonderful gift to have. So he's
a necessary
terrific.
One, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going down.
Well, down the list we have Sandy Bishop, who is absolutely the most active, informed, has the biggest network of contacts, has done literally everything, and as executive director of the land trust, she has been through fire and knows people personally on the government side, and so it is just a joy to work with her.
Absolutely. And I have to say another brief story about Sandy, because recently, if you read the paper this week, you'll see that the levy is coming up in November, and one of the issues about the levy for the dump is that we can only do it once a year. And the first thing Sandy did was say, well, we're just going to have to change that. And I think it actually requires a constitutional amendment. And she didn't even bat an eye. She just said, well, even in the newspaper article, she said, we're working on changing that.
Well, that's right. She not only didn't bat an eye, but she did the groundwork necessary to start the ball moving. She knows both our representatives and their staffs, and so she got the inside word on why they would or why they wouldn't, and what we as a district now must do in order to get them to work on our side. By the way, a constitutional amendment sounds terribly intimidating, but if you think of your ballot and read it from year to year, you realize that there are some technical constitutional amendments that often get put in there that are typically passed, and they're just that. They're technical adjustments. There's no major policy initiative here.
No.
Our problem is that there are only four of these taxing districts.
Who are the other ones?
Well, there's one up in Bellingham and there's one in Everett. Neither of them do solid waste the way we do. The only active one, like us, is in fact San Juan County, from which we've been carved out of. So we're the ball game, and that's one of the challenges in terms of getting legislative support for this. We're the small game in town. We have to get their attention first. On the other hand, this is the San Juan Islands, you know, and we have a way of speaking with a single voice very effectively.
Yeah, we also have a pretty strong legislative representatives right now in the state that are very recognized and have important positions.
Yes, so. Kevin especially.
Yeah, Kevin especially. So let's go on. Who else do we have on the board?
Well, we have a treasurer, Bruce Creston, who you interviewed last week, I believe.
Did.
And who is absolutely the brightest guy to come down the pike in a long time.
Absolutely.
And he has such a wonderful enthusiasm for detail. He has, you know, I'm going to back up a little bit. One of the things you have to do as a new organization is to develop working relationships with the people around you. And the people around us include county government, and include Mylene, who's running the accounting for the county. And I believe, and Jan Shears, who's the treasurer as well. But Bruce has, in the course of just a few months, not only worked out a good relationship with Mylene, but I think some of these people are so respectful of his ability to handle detail that there's this sort of indirect deferral to him, which I think is marvelous. It gets us off to a very solid footing.
Absolutely.
We couldn't do it without him.
Absolutely, and it gives the commissioners some confidence that their own staff knows and understands how we arrive at the decisions that are made, both fiscal decisions and policy decisions, that they're more comfortable with them.
Well,
this is new territory.
It is new territory. And the original council last year that went ahead and took the risk to allow us to start, they were literally bombarded with sophisticated, I shouldn't say sophisticated, but with comprehensive accounting models that we had prepared. Bruce did a fabulous job. I contributed a little bit. And it was enough for them to realize that we understood the questions. We had at least a reasonable perception of what was important, and had not let something go unturned. And these were very comprehensive models that I think Patty Miller was simply stunned by when she saw them.
Actually, well, they are. They're very sophisticated.
Well,
and yet simple. That's the interesting part. They're understandable.
Well, they're understandable, and they're not sophisticated in a mathematical sense,
right,
but they're comprehensive.
Right. That's a better word.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I can't talk about Bruce Kreps as the treasurer without also talking about him as a musician.
Oh, talented
And he
guy.
Has his own business.
Yes.
I forget what it's called.
Noble Woods.
Yeah,
that's right.
And he provides wood for musical instruments.
He does, and has a market around the world, and has a wonderful reputation. And it does something else. He's the purist of us all, and so he is teaching us how to recycle better by example. And he will bring in one garbage can, maybe, I have to be careful here if you're listening, maybe every several months, right? And I'm bringing one in every 2 weeks, you know, and I think, well, why can't I do what Bruce does, you know? But he's riding a bicycle. He's serious about this, and I think that's a value system that we have to have on our board.
Absolutely, and we need to have in a broader sense of the community. One of the things that Sandy's going to talk about is the psychology. Next week is the psychology and value of participating in the kind of solid waste facility we have, both the recycling of usable goods and the recycling of materials that have other uses.
You know, this gets us back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, and that is the volunteer component and why people volunteer. And that was just one of the options we had vis-a-vis a bigger property tax. But we also saw on Lopez less than enthusiasm for the idea of one tax pays all, when in fact many people believe that some of these items should be paid for, but by user fees rather than by tax, because a tax will essentially take it, whether you use it or not, and people, there are some, not a majority, but some who resent the idea that a public entity would simply come in and take part of your property. So we needed a balance, and that's why we developed the tripod approach. But the volunteer side of it, getting back to that, is a big component.
Absolutely.
And so I have to ask my partner here, Carol, why did you volunteer as volunteer coordinator?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, because I've gone to the dump. That's my only relationship. I read about it in the paper. I support it, the concepts. I voted for it. But I had no real connection or no emotional tie, except for gratitude that this was happening. And someone asked me. I think it was Mickey. And for whatever reason, I won't go into it, but I said yes. And what I've discovered, and I discovered it really quickly, is there is an amazing psychological connection to understanding what happens with solid waste and what happens with the goods we consume. I am fascinated by the whole field. I mean, this is not part of being the volunteer coordinator. This interview and all the interviews I've done and going to do have to do with my own excitement and aliveness, I feel, as a citizen of the world, to understand better this kind of almost, I believe it's an interim. We don't know. It won't be in my lifetime. But this is what we can do as an interim, every single one of us. And I'm thrilled. This is just tiny. I'll quit in a minute, but I do get excited.
Don't quit. You're talking trash very well here.
I am talking trash. I just read, Sandy and I are going to talk about it. Sweden actually has 3% of their, the things that go into whatever they call their solid waste facility, 3% of it is trash.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, it's over 60%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's this deeper story. Everywhere you look, there's deeper stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a true Lopezian. The story about Lopezians I heard after when I got here was that when a Lopezian wants a glass of water, the first thing they do is go down to the beach, dig up the sand to blow the glass. We are people who like to get to the roots of things. So that's my story.
Well, I think it's a great story, and I think it's similar to mine, actually, in some ways, in the sense that today... I think modern economics, modern theory of financial management is missing the boat with respect to solid waste, because people simply want to feel good doing the right thing. And that good feeling means they're starting something that may not be finished in their lifetime, but they're beginning to say, hey, I'm making a difference, turning the corner here. You know, creating examples, whatever. Let's evaluate some options here. Now, in Sweden, As is in the case of most of Europe, a lot of the responsibility for recycling falls on the manufacturer. And that's beginning here with respect to some of our e-waste program.
Yeah.
But most stuff, the manufacturer builds something and sends it down the road. If there were some national legislation that made them responsible, we would still, as consumers, pay for it. But
yes,
we'd pay through it for it through a very efficient system, such as that in Sweden, where a lot of these items that are not in garbage are simply reused.
Yeah.
The containers, the other packaging. Packaging is a completely different art there. In this country, packaging is a piece of billboard. It's a piece of advertising.
Right. Right.
And it looks it, and it's horrid. But that's not allowed in Europe now.
Yeah. Wow. That, I mean, as I say, the stories are deep. There is one board member we haven't touched yet, and it fits with our talking about the volunteer component here, and that is
Dan Post.
Absolutely.
And Dan Post has been at this longer than any of us.
Absolutely. And I remember, I got to say, I remember being at a meeting years ago, when years ago, before this was even thought of, and Dan Post stood up at this meeting. He said, "I don't understand why you're even doing this. I make one-way trips. I should be filling my truck with them every single time, and this makes no sense for me." And he was passionate, articulate, and it, no one listened. It was like, it was as though it was a voice in the wilderness speaking another language.
Well, we're listening now, and not only is he standing up, he's doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, he is driving the truck. He is coordinating. We have a little ops committee, and he is coordinating all of the recycles, working with Pete, who was the successor owner of the Lopez Trucking, to deliver these at very low cost to our Skagit Steel and Recycling. All of the operation details, the planning, Dan is working with Neil on, and the physical side of actually driving our roll-off truck, Dan's doing it.
I
mean, he's the doer. And it's such a pleasure to work with a doer.
It is.
You know?
It is. And I love his voice. I've been fortunate enough. This is another thing that really interests me, is working with really competent, passionate people, and this board is. And I'm not required to, but I attend every board meeting because, number one, I'm really interested in how this all works at the deepest level I can. And number two, I think it's always fascinating to see how people make difficult decisions when there's strong differences of opinion. And there frequently are strong differences of opinion on this board. And
well, you know, you came in halfway through the process this year, and we have had a history of having unanimous decisions, but it was only a matter of time before...
It's true for every organization.
And I think we're stronger for our different views. If we were all Johnny One Notes, all looking the same way, I don't think we would represent all of Lopez, and I don't think we would get the job done in terms of being able to go out and look at options and alternatives.
Right.
But we have, you know, I often use this analogy. You know, we have the Che Guevara's, the people who see us as a movement, and then we have the kind of Wall Street analysis bottom line that you might get from a major company, and both of those views are in some way employed, and they both have
really
audiences.
Useful. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have to get, you know, we have to put the needle, just the way you balance the needle on this transmission, we have to get the needle right between those
exactly.
views.
Exactly. Exactly. For all kinds of reasons. I mean, that's the only way it will function. So the other part then, let's talk a little bit about you, because mostly when I see you there, you're either trying to figure out where the hole is and fill it in, but you're also up recycling. So what's it like to be up there in that, I forget even what you call it, recycling?
Well, people call it different things, but the word I use is Recycle Plaza, which is borrowed from a source not our own, but I think it fits.
I do too.
And actually, I think the little cement cross in the middle of that plaza is probably the center of Lopez when that dump is over, and just the sheer number of people coming in.
Absolutely.
And I'm so impressed that the effort of the volunteers over the last several months has lifted the knowledge base of everyone. So now we can step back and really get on with the job that Neil would like to have us do, and that is continue to decontaminate these totes, which is a challenge. It was a challenge before the bees arrived. It is especially a challenge today.
Yeah, this is recent, it's not new to the people working there, but recently gone more public and with problem solving. So it's a dangerous place. Larry was telling me when he came in today, he's got a couple of bee stings himself, some badges of courage. And
well,
I mean,
hardly.
There's a lot of bees up there. They're yellow jackets, but they're in the family.
Yeah, but we're there's several options on the table here. One of them, and this we're evaluating, and that's a morning opening for the whole facility, including the recycle center. So that would allow people who have to leave the island early, but also who would be particularly sensitive to flying insects, to come at a time when they are essentially not there.
It's cooler.
And then other things we're evaluating would be things like there are plastic paper wasp nests that you can get and hang, and this begins to play on the territorial imperatives of the yellow jackets versus the paper wasps, and that may and has proven elsewhere to be a real deterrent to the yellow jackets. I'm going to try that. There are more commercial traps. I happen to favor the the large vacuum once in a while, but we have an ops board. Everyone has an opinion here. Neil's vast experience carries terrific weight in this, and we tend to pay special attention.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
His experience.
Well, my guess is you'll come up with more than one solution in a situation like this.
Well, that's right, and we will try them and try to perfect the best solution.
So if you haven't, I can't imagine anyone who's even visited Lopez that hasn't been to the dump. I mean, really, people walk in from the street, and of course, the first thing they see is take it or leave it. If you drive in, though, the first thing you see after you're done with the kiosk is the recycling center up there. And if you have things to recycle, the next thing you see is some or many smiling volunteers ready to either help or point you in the right direction or give you the information you need to be a really effective recycler on Lopez. And believe me, there's a lot to know, but it's easy.
Well, that's nice to hear, Carol. I think it's easy, but we're on the inside looking around, and that's not fair because people come in having never done it before, and what they see is a division between plastic, paper, and metal, and glass, and that it doesn't stop there. Suddenly, plastics is four different plastics,
exactly.
And metal's two different metals, and glass is three different glass.
And then you got a place for the lids, and then you got a place that have the necks on the bottles.
But when you get into it, when you've done it the second or third time, it does flow. In fact, it's interesting as a volunteer. There are some people who really do want to do it themselves. They don't mind asking a question, but they don't want to be assisted when they think they've got it now. This is their third time. They got it. And so you have to back off, and you should back off.
And just keep an eye on. And then I notice you with the long sticks.
So with the bees, it's getting longer.
Yeah, I bet. And actually, because I sent out the notice, there are times a day when you just don't even want to stir it up no matter what.
Well, that's right. And so that we have an aluminum steel contamination problem. I'm not sure how that's going to be solved, but we can at some point when we're baling take the aluminum totes and further evaluate them with magnets at that time.
Right, because it is the aluminum with the sweet drinks in it that are the primary attractors of the yellow jackets to the site. So those of you listening, please pass the word to anybody you know that. You can't wash them out too much. 2-3 times, rinse them out. You'll save somebody from getting stung.
Thank you. Well said, Karen.
Yeah. The other part, if you haven't been there, even if you don't have any garbage, you really need to take a tour of your solid waste facility. If you're a second homeowner here and only here maybe in the summer and don't come to the dump very often, you really need to take a tour. It's an amazing thing. One of the things, Larry's wife, Sarah Eppenbach, is the chair of an organization called SWAP, the Solid Waste Alternative Projects. And one of her aspirations has always been to have a dinner at the dump. That's a really oxymoron in some...
Well, it isn't with our dump.
It is not.
Because it is so clean. And
absolutely.
We thank Neil for setting the standard there where it belongs. And it's a challenge for the volunteers, frankly. You know, I mentioned before some of our activities are uneconomic by traditional standards. My picking up a little piece of plastic and carrying it 100 yards to where it belongs, it may fall into that category. But... we do that because Neil has set that standard, and we believe that that is the right thing.
Yeah.
That this is what's going to keep this whole activity attractive to the public, and that's essentially our business. It's
right.
A public service business.
And there is another reason for all of these containers, and when you spoke about the problem with the mix of the metal and the mixed metal and the aluminum, because when these things get all bailed up and sent to their, where we're going to get paid for it. It's part of, not necessarily part of our revenue stream, but it helps us break even because there's a cost.
Well, that's
to
right.
To have people come and pick it up and pay the gas, the ferry fees, all of that. So, I mean, at best, we hope to break even.
Well, we're going to break a little better than even, especially if we can manage our glass a little more successfully.
Right.
I'm not going to go into that today, but we have options on the near horizon that
you've been
will
working
give us
on that for a long
a
time.
A much lower cost glass disposal plant.
But the other part of that, though, is if there's any contamination, we don't get paid.
Well, that's right. And it's kind of a three strikes you're out rule. We may get paid for a little bit, but if we can continue to contaminate, they simply will take us off their lists. And then because of our sort of geographic location, we're kind of up the river.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have too many other options. So we have to meet those standards. There's no question about it. And we do.
No, I understand that. But that is one of the reasons why, along with being just a really healthy, thoughtful site, that's one of the reasons why all the contamination and the careful separation is essential for all of us.
Exactly so. Exactly.
And as taxpayers and residents of Lopez Island, we are making a contribution to the business plan every time we responsibly recycle our own things.
That's correct. That's correct, and it's very appreciated. It is part of our business model. We are making revenue on recycled. Not a lot, but certainly making revenue, whereas in the past the county was losing a great deal.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Define contamination. Give some examples.
Oh, contamination. Al's here too, and he asked us to define contamination. When we get Larry do that?
Well, it's it's material in the totes or the containers of these recyclables that shouldn't be there. That's defined most generally, but it can be any number of things. It can be dirt on the agricultural plastics. It can be this enormous amount of lemonade and other items that are attracting bees in the aluminum cans. But the biggest contaminants in the aluminum cans are the steel cans that go in there. Ditto aluminum cans in the steel bins also are contaminant. Whatever doesn't belong ends up being unintentionally baled, and then the bale itself is only 99% or 95% or 90% pure at some percentage level. And I think Paige does a very good job describing what happens. If that bale smells, if it has obvious contaminants on the surface of it, and peat brings it to Skagit Steel, they're going to look at it, smell it, and then say, no, not today. Take that home. Well, we have no home for it if it's not there. So that's a real problem.
That is a problem. And I recall I recall interviewing Sarah Eppenbach last week, and she said, I never thought I'd be on the radio telling people how to scrub out their peanut butter jars, but you need to use soap and a brush and do it really well.
Oh,
so
I disagree.
There you go.
Her husband disagrees. All you have to do is put about an inch of water in your peanut jar, put the lid solidly back on, and shake the heck out of it, and you'll get 95% of the peanut butter out of it.
Well, I think I have a different kind of peanut butter. Mine is really tough to get out.
I'm finding no support for that in
no,
this room.
No, he's not at all. I'm on Sarah's team. Brush, and who would have ever imagined that we'd be here taking very seriously how to clean a peanut butter jar.
It is serious.
It makes sense.
It makes sense. And today, if you bring in a jar, a plastic or a glass jar full of peanut butter, and we see it, we're going to have to march it over to the garbage and throw it away there.
Yep, absolutely.
There is no water at the site that we can, anyone can wash items with.
And there are worse things that most people would never put in a recycle, and that is partially used cans of things that have spoiled. I've heard stories like that are The peanut butter jar is not going to smell. This could, one can, could contaminate a whole bale.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, I'm going to say something a little less negative to all those people who have made mistakes in the past and have the wrong items. A lot of that is unintentional. You
Absolutely.
Know, we can't control everything in the tote without actually being on top of it every moment. Well, people at home can't often control everything that goes into their smaller bins, especially with guests and family members. And so they are often as surprised as we are when they upend something and, whoa, something comes out thoroughly unexpected. And I take their honest surprise as just that. But it does happen. And the more that we can sort of police our own recyclables, the better. That gets back to the question, well, what do you do? I don't know, you're looking for a station break here?
No, okay. We're good.
How do you do it at home? And we're thinking about maybe having people write in with their own solution, because there's no magic here.
You know, that's a great idea.
We've got 20 or 30 bins at times and different items to recycle. But at home, you can often have just four or five, you know, one for glass and one for mixed plastics that you will then separate, and then one for the various metals. So you can get by with four. Maybe seven is better.
What do you do?
How
do you do it?
We that's a good question. We did, and this is what I need to talk about. It's not a steady state, because we don't have these really nice, beautiful plastic containers. We use boxes, and it's a question of the mix coming in as well as the number of boxes available. Certainly one box is glass, and just glass. And another box could be just aluminum cans if we have a whole lot of guests who are drinking soda pop. But we don't drink very much soda pop anymore, and so we will have maybe one box, a small box, for all types of cans. Remind me to talk about the can crusher too before I'm over. And then we will have several smaller boxes for different kinds of plastics, because, you know, we're separating the necks now. This is the threaded necks from the tubs, and we will have a bin for each of those. We use a lot of tin foil, oddly enough, and so we will have a separate bin for a small one for tin foil.
That doesn't go with the aluminum?
It doesn't go with the aluminum cans, because it's deposited separately from the aluminum cans.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. See?
We now have at the plaza two locations for depositing aluminum foil, and that includes the lightweight pie tins that are treated the same way. And by the way, we would like the aluminum foil flattened and not just balled up for probably some pretty obvious reason.
Yeah.
And one of the locations is sitting right between the aluminum can tote and the now metal steel can bin that's next to it. It's sitting up above, and you can just drop your aluminum foil there. Or around the side of the staircase near the kiosk, there's a big clear plastic sack that has been the traditional source holding the aluminum foil.
So you keep using the word steel, and I thought that was tin.
Well, it is steel, and I mean,
but it's the same thing. We're talking about the
same
thing.
It is.
Okay.
Often a tin coating to reduce the rust, and a lot of that doesn't happen anymore. The coating has gotten so thin that basically, professionally, people just treat them now as steel.
Yeah.
And we set about building a can crusher. And I think a lot of the people who have been to the Recycle Plaza have seen three of these can crushers that Dave Thomas did the wonderful pioneering effort in designing. And they use 2x4s for leverage, but we'll call it a compressing angle that crushes even the strongest cans.
Wow. I've seen them.
We wanted to automate that in having a large machine-driven can crusher. And, in fact, we had one, and it could crush the stink out of aluminum cans, but it actually balked, even with a half-horsepower engine, it balked at steel cans, because the bottom of the steel can, if presented at just the right angle, is, frankly, a very, very strong item.
And it used to be, though, that you could take both lids off. Now you can't anymore.
Well, that's right. They've changed the design.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That's where it fell apart.
Well, that's right, and that's where your ankle can get damaged if you push them, you know, onto the ground and misstep. So what we've done is allowed steel cans to go into the steel bin uncrushed. But what we'd like to do is begin marketing to anyone who wants one, a at-home use steel can crusher. And we have made 10 of them now. They're going to be available beginning Saturday. Call me at 4788 if you want to get on the list, or sign up at the list that's now posted on the steel bin. We're asking $15, which represents just the costs of the parts that went into this small production run. And these things work. They are really effective at crushing all sizes of tin cans.
What kind of floor do you have to have? Do you have to have cement? Do you do it on cement, or could you do it on a wood floor?
Well, they're not designed to work on the floor at all. They're designed to work on a tabletop, and they have little feet on them that would isolate them from the tabletop. Or you can screw them down to something like a wooden sawhorse or something like that. And that's what we had used when we were actually displaying their prototype models in the last few months. We had them all on little wooden horses. But any tabletop would work.
Okay, all right.
Or you could mount, as Dave has done, you could mount them on a fence or something like that and support them that way. Yeah.
So it could be vertical, could be
Well, it
horizontal.
It is better to have them horizontal, because vertical you want to have your hand in there holding the can, and that may be problematic. But you could mount them horizontally by just putting a diagonal piece of wood under them, and that would support them.
Well, that's breaking news right there, folks.
Well,
this Saturday, you can check it out. It sounds like you better get on a list, though. They might already, many of them spoken for.
I hope so. We have two already spoken for, but as of quarter to 12.
What's the number?
4788.
That's Larry's personal number.
That is.
Yeah, okay. So how often are you at the dump? Sorry to ask that question.
Paige and I have a kind of a standing joke on that. I guess the real answer is slightly too often. I feel that I have kind of a father-like responsibility to make this volunteer thing function. And as you know, Carol, it is a challenge. It's a challenge in the summer because of family and other activities. It's a challenge because volunteering means people who really want a beginning, a middle, and an end, a project rather than a lifelong pursuit. They want to feel good about what they do. They would like to exercise a little of their value system as they do it. And you wrap all that into a package and try to fit it into either the take it or leave it or the recycle plan. And it's a challenge.
Yeah. No. And this would be a good time. I did invite Joyce Brenner to join us today, and she wasn't able to respond. But as far as I know, she's been there almost every Sunday since the dump opened.
Yeah,
since I've been there, which is almost 3 months, she's on the schedule every single Sunday.
We have an honor roll of wonderful volunteers.
Exactly. That the Clark family.
For example. Yeah. And many others. And if we can start now, I'm going to have to name them all, so be careful.
Okay. You better do it. This is it. This is the honor roll.
Oh,
and you, too, will be eligible. And if we forgot your name, you can call me at 2138, and I will get it on here next week with Sandy. Or you could tell Larry, or you'll see one of us at the dump. Remind us.
All right. Well, I mean, we have, as you mentioned, the Clark family. We have Titty Langford and her husband. We have Susan Muckle.
Yep.
We have Linda Hudson. We have the Gandinis, Pete and Karen. Yep. We have Rose Torres.
Yep.
We have Mickey Ryan. We have Stephanie Hilton. And I'm going to shout out Stephanie Hilton for not only volunteering now, but for the many, many years that she volunteered in the evening to fold and essentially support the take it or leave it when there wasn't this complex of volunteers we have today.
Right.
I'm going to miss some of these names because I'm not that familiar with. We have Joan and Trevor Bryant.
Yep.
We have Grandpa John. John Severo, who's there frequently. We have this woman, Carol Steckler, who's often there. Um, go through. We have Mac Langford as well as Titi. We have Linda Noreen up at recycling is frequently there. Sharon, is it Kochaba?
Yeah, she's often at Take It or Leave It.
She's often there. And then with Linda Noreen, there's Alifair, her, I don't know whether that's her niece or granddaughter or
I think
just a charming young lady.
Yeah.
Who they work well as a team. We have this guy, Paige Reed, who shows up everywhere. We have Brian Silverstein and Bill Scherer and Bill Clemens and Mike Kamaskis. I have to get his name right. Kamenskis. I'm sure that's not right. Blake Rankin. And Joyce Brenner, that you mentioned before. And I'm missing a few people here, and I apologize for it. But what I'm doing, and Gene Heffman has been in there, and Ann Palmer, who's showing up. Some people who are just been at the facility between the beginning of July and today.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And there's a whole other group that worked very hard.
From January until July.
Yeah.
That's true. And many of these people actually did work from January through this time. Some are new and some aren't new.
Right.
Some of them work once a month. Some of them work twice a month. And some of them work every single week, one day a week.
That's right.
And some of them even come in, I mean, Rose Torres, Maria Mendez, we forgot her.
I forgot
oh
Maria.
My gosh.
They come in
all the time. Sometimes I'm in a wheelchair, so sometimes when I sign up, Maria just comes down because she knows I can't really push the carts or anything. And these people are, they're there. They are just there.
And they are, and they're
they
fabulous.
They are my hero. They're what makes our business model and your dump that we all pay for with our property taxes. They are what makes this work, and we need you. We need anyone who wants to spend about 2 hours, that's what the shift is now, at the dump, ideally twice a month, but once a month is fine. It's really helpful, though, if you would make at least a month, once a month commitment. We do have some people that have maybe 4 hours on the shift in 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And we're grateful for those 4 hours. But if you were to see what I see when I look at the August schedule, and I just sent out a notice, there are right now in August, Saturday and Sunday, there's 3 openings every single week. So
opportunity,
the rest of August.
Opportunity beckons.
You'll be placed with a really experienced volunteer the first time. And then you get to schedule yourself. I look at who's scheduled, but nobody else does. Everyone schedules their own. You will see all the people that are working. You'll see the whole schedule for as many months past and future as you want. It'll all be on. You'll be part of a really well done software program that runs what we call LISI,
right?
Which is the way the volunteer. It's the volunteer management system online.
This is the creation of Paul Lasbo, who has done Lopez Rocks and is such a skilled programmer. He's made our calendar on LISI such an easy, interactive sign-up procedure that it's truly a piece of cake. And as a volunteer, you get to see everyone on the shift, and you get to pick the shift that you want and the activity and the time that you want. So it's a very attractive option.
Yeah, it really is. All you have to do is you can call me at 2138. You already have Larry's number. You could call him, but he'll just send me an email.
Growing up, girl.
So why not just bypass that and call me directly?
Thank you.
And our stop in at the dump, we do have at Take It or Leave It, we have information for you to take home with you and sign up. If you're interested at all, talk to anybody you know that works there. Ask anybody at Take It or Leave It when the dump is open, or call me. And you, too, could be working at the dump by, let's say, this Saturday or Sunday or next week.
And it's a very satisfying activity.
It really is. I think you'll be thrilled to be a part of this hardworking but fun-loving. I mean, it is quite an intense pleasure to be at the dump, either in recycling or at Take It or Leave It, with the guests, including all the people who live here and all the who visit, who come in and say, "Wow, I can't believe this."
Well, it's terribly satisfying. You're doing the right thing, and also I want to, especially at the recycling area, it's interesting and very candidly. There's not many things that we do every day here on Lopez that you can be asked 20 or 30 questions and have answers for all of them. But at the Recycle Plaza, with very little background experience, you will have those answers. And frankly, it's fun to be able to say, "I know that. Here's where to go. There's, you know, this is how we're treating that." And in our complex lives, to be able to simplify to positive responses to questions is actually a very pleasing psychological benefit to all of us.
Wow, that is a great story. I never even occurred to me, but it's kind of like you know the map in your head, and you can point people constantly to the right direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not that. And we try not to change the map too often.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's a little easier in recycling than it is in Take It or Leave
It. I'm afraid so. We have about 500 decisions to make in recycling, and you have, I say, 5 to 10,000.
Absolutely. Well said, although it has its own rewards too. So, and that's where I work, is at Take It or Leave It, and I invite you to join us in either place, the Recycling Plaza or the Take It or Leave It area. Or there are other options too. There's SWAP, the Solid Waste Alternative Projects. They are looking for people to work on their projects. Which
they are constantly, and they've got some big projects coming up. Yep. There's the Trash and Fashion Show coming up on Saturday the 18th, and I invite people who are... Sunday the 18th, yeah. I beg your pardon. I invite people to get out and get tickets now. They're available around town. There are not going to be an infinite supply, so this is a good time to go forward with that. There are other activities planned by SWAP, fundraisers, a hoedown, a dance later in September. There's a full docket of activities with which one could participate in. And I might add also, there are other volunteer tasks that we haven't talked about yet. I mean, we have a constant need for information, say, regarding recyclable pricing and availability and cleanliness and the kind of information that comes from both the ability to talk on the phone and call these people, but also to be on site and see what they've actually received in terms of reinforcing an understanding of how high a quality do these recyclers demand. There's also lots of new programs in terms of textile recycling that we need to further research.
Absolutely.
So volunteers in those areas might be very appealing to people who cannot go to the dump, right, but would like to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a place for you. And anyone you know, your friends, relatives, neighbors, please keep passing the word. The dump needs you. We have just about a minute or two here before we'll close with a little bit of our garbage music. And I'm trying to think about it. Is there anything else that we want to say before we're ready to close the day here? We've covered a long distance.
Well, this is a beginning phase of our activity, and we can't treat it as a done deal. And so people who want to come in with ideas and new thoughts have a very positive reception. We need feedback. We need not just volunteers, but we need contributors of all sorts, and contributing ideas of new and different ways of doing things. Even if you use the facility, give us your ideas of what worked and what didn't.
Yeah.
And frankly, what didn't is almost more important.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Yeah. We really welcome feedback, and there is a suggestion box that's still back in the back of Take It or Leave It, where the infant and small children are. It's big. You can't miss it. It says so. A suggestion on it. And we welcome your input. We welcome your presence. And please, if you have guests coming, put it on the tour.
Well, it belongs to the tour. It's one of the leading Lopez tourist attractions, and the volume of people, especially at the Take It or Leave It on any weekend in the summer, is just phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, with that, we're going to close out this morning's Talk and Trash. Thanks so much, Larry, for being here.
Thank you, Carol. Fun to be here.
I really appreciate it. I appreciate your being here, Alexander. And this is KLOI LP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9, closing out with some garbage music here. Let it go, Alexander.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bar.